So as we said tonight, Mitt Romney takes the stage. Some people say Paul Ryan sort of softened up the stage for him by talking about their musical preferences and how different they are, kind of saying don't expect the hipster when he hits the stage tonight. But according to the latest poll from CBS News, a third of American voters say they don't even know enough about him to form an opinion. Here in Tampa, we have two reporters who do, Michael Cranish and Scott Hellman, both of the Boston Globe. Their widely praised book, The Real Romney, is now available in paperback with a new prologue. And they've also had wall-to-wall coverage on CNN, which just did that terrific Romney bio hour. And the backbone of it was these two reporters. So Michael and Scott, welcome.
Thank you, Robin. Great to be here.
I don't know how you had time to come see us with everything you're doing.
But for you, we have time.
But let's start with the thing. Thank you. Let's start with the thing tonight that makes this a first, the first Mormon. We hear Mitt Romney's going to be speaking far more in depth about his faith than he's ever done. A longtime friend, Grant Bennett, is speaking as well. We know he will tell, as he has in the past, as he does in your book, of a family man who's loved by friends, a church leader, a bishop at one point, which is sort of the parish priest, if you will, in the Mormon church. It will be a glowing portrait. And Scott Hellman, start with you. You say what to that?
Well, I think there's a lot to talk about if you're painting a glowing portrait. Certainly if you're talking about him as a family man, somebody who has had a very long esteemed role as a church leader, somebody who came into the Olympics to a difficult situation and turned them around. I think, rightly so, he deserves, he's going to get a lot of credit for those things. And so I think what you'll see tonight is a series of speakers try to illuminate these pieces of Mitt Romney's life that are still dark to many American voters.
But stay with the Mormon faith, because you've said it cuts both ways. Yes, in your book, you talked to so many people, and being from Boston, we know so many Mormons who attended either his ward or the stake there, the larger church in the area. You spoke to a lot. Why does it cut both ways?
I think it definitely cuts both ways. I mean, for two reasons, the sort of macro and the micro, if you will. I mean, the macro picture, we all know, there are a lot of voters who are skeptical of Mormonism or worse. And they've made the decision that it's worth the risk to open up about Mitt Romney, to humanize him by talking about his religion, hoping that benefit outweighs the risk, right, of turning voters off. And then specifically, when you're starting to talk about who Mitt Romney was in the church, there are a couple of people who are, very critical of his tenure, who say that he was very insensitive and flexible, in some cases, pressuring the woman to have the abortion.
Well, let's tell the story.
Sure.
There's Peggy Hayes, the young single Mormon woman who knew the family well and became pregnant. She says as Bishop Mitt Romney came to her with adoption options and insisted she give up the baby, she was crushed and I think left the faith.
Eventually left the faith, that's right.
Another woman, unnamed, had a sixth unplanned pregnancy. Her doctor, who I think was a Mormon, told her there's a blood clot for your health. You probably should have an abortion. But she says Mitt Romney came to her and insisted that his concern was with the child in the womb. She was also crushed. This is a layperson acting as a parish priest. You don't have Catholic priests running for president. So, maybe it's unfair to bring those questions up, but will be.
Right, but and that's what you do as the church leader. You're the messenger for the church's policy, and the church's policy, as we know, frowns very much on abortion, frowns on single parenthood. So in that case, in those two cases you mentioned, he's delivering what he believes the church's right message is. Now, there are plenty of other women who will say, no, he was very flexible, he listened to us, he did make some accommodations. So it's a contradictory picture, but those negative stories are out there.
And the fact is, the we're now seeing the picture, apparently. We're going to be hearing more. And Michael Cranish, in the book, you say his sense of detachment that people perceive is partly a function of his faith. It's been an insulated church. Is there also a sense of destiny? Just to ask a little bit about that. We know that America has an exceptional role in the Mormon faith. It's a relatively modern-day faith. The Garden of Eden is said to be in Missouri, according to the believers. Christ is returning here. There is a theory long discounted by Mormon scholars that there might be a Mormon who will rise to lead this country. Is there a sense of prophecy to this that some evangelicals might find uncomfortable?
Well, the Romney story is definitely intermittent with the Mormon story. Mitt's great-great-grandfather came from the area of Liverpool, England, came here, knew the Mormon leader, Joseph Smith, and then Mitt's great-grandfather, Miles Park Romney, was told by Brigham Young, the Mormon leader, to take a wife and then several wives, and then went to Mexico to found a colony where polygamy could continued to flourish after it was banned in the United States. So then that's where Mitt's father, George, was born in Mexico, came to this country at 5 years old. So the story of their life is also the story of the building of the Mormon faith.
But I have to rush to say, polygamy has long been banned by the church.
Of course.
Go ahead. Yeah.
But that's the history that goes back. And, of course, George Mitt's father and his grandfather were not polygamists and so forth. But there is this history that we write about in the book. To understand the Romney story, you have to understand the whole history of the church, and so forth. So it is a story that we do tell in some detail.
Well, and let's pick up there with the father, George Romney. There's a picture in 1964 of young Mitt and his brother Scott. It's in an AP photo. They're watching as their father, a very moderate Republican leader, asks his party to reject extremists. The GOP instead rejects George Romney, goes on to nominate Barry Goldwater. You know, he says extremism in defense of liberty is no vice. This is all wonderful history. But you say these two conventions, that one and this one, are bookends. Why?
Right. Well, I did a story for the Sunday Boston Globe about this, and I saw that picture, which I hadn't seen before, wasn't in the book, of young Mitt at 17 years old, attending that 1964 convention in San Francisco, where he watched his father earnestly. What's so striking about that is that Mitt Romney at 17 was at the epicenter of this war within the Republican Party over the direction of the Republican Party. And he saw that George Romney, his father, was being rejected by the party. Romney had asked for a plank rejecting extremism, and the party said no. And George Romney said at the time, if we nominate Barry Goldwater, that will be political suicide, quote unquote, for the Republican Party. And as Mitt tells the story, his father walked out of the Republican convention. So here's Mitt Romney, 48 years later, walking into this Republican convention as the party's nominee, calling himself, quote, severely conservative. He's not a moderate like his father, coming in saying the party should go this way. He is basically been courting for a long time today's version of the Barry Goldwater wing of the party. So it's really a turnabout.
It's like
from
a real
48 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Boston Globe reporters Michael Cranish and Scott Hellman are with us. Their book, The Real Romney, it's now out in paperback. You can read an excerpt at hereandnow.org and stay here, because when we come back, let's talk a little about that turnabout. It is stunning for people who knew Mitt Romney just a couple decades ago. And what does he do about that tonight? That's in 1 minute, Here and Now. Welcome back to Here and Now on Radio Row here at the Tampa Convention Center at the RNC, where tonight Mitt Romney will address the convention and the country for the first time as the party's official nominee for president. We've been speaking with Boston Globe's Michael Cranish and Scott Hellman, co-authors of The Real Romney, the book about the Republican presidential candidate that's out with a new prologue. Just terrific. We highly recommend it. And we, before the break, we're talking about this evolution that everyone has seen. Michael Cranish, you were saying not just an evolution of Mitt Romney, but sort of a full circle from his father's attempt at running for president decades ago. And talk about what he calls an evolution, and many people would. You know, many people have changed over their lives. But let's just tick them off first, if you don't mind. I'll do that. There were the social issues. Mitt Romney was pro-choice, pro-gay rights. He said that he would be both more than Ted Kennedy when he ran against Ted Kennedy. And then here's a paragraph from the New York Times. Mr. Romney has propounded the benefits expanding and enforcing regulation, including the minimum wage and environmental laws. He's argued that government spending, including public investment in private companies, can stimulate the economy and create jobs. He's levied taxes, of course, in Massachusetts you call them fees, and advocated tax penalties to shape public behavior, as in the health care mandate. And we would add that in his official portrait, he had two things included. One, a picture of his beloved wife, Ann Romney, and the other, the health care bill. It's in his official portrait from Massachusetts. Your sense of the man, well, actually, we'll start with Scott. Left off with Michael, so we'll start with Scott Hellman. How, knowing now, having tracked him in his book, how did we get to that man that we see now at this convention from the man I just described? Is it evolution or is it political?
It's a long and winding path. I mean, look, if you look back at who he was in 1994, when he first ran for office against Ted Kennedy for the United States Senate, he's a completely different candidate than the Mitt Romney that's going to crest the stage tonight and give this speech at the Republican convention. I mean, you ticked off some of them. You could keep going. Gun rights. You know, this is a guy who dismissed the contract with America, Newt Gingrich's revolution, who tried to distance himself from Ronald Reagan, right? And now we're going to see him try to, you know, embrace Reagan's legacy tonight. I mean, I think ultimately, you know, this is a very carefully calibrated shift to the right. And it really came a few years ago when he was a moderate governor of Massachusetts who knew he wanted to be president, but knew he had to court the right wing of the party to be successful. A moderate governor from Massachusetts was not going to win the nomination. And so he started over and over to change his positions and to recast himself.
But what do you think he does, Michael Cranish, if, in fact, he becomes president? He's got Paul Ryan at his side. Does he believe these things? I mean, this is where people have trouble.
Well, this is the question I think that's the most asked question about Mitt Romney, because these aren't two Boston Globe reporters saying, aha, he changed a position. We are looking at what he said to describe himself. He called himself a moderate when he ran for the U.S. Senate in 1994. He called himself a moderate when he ran for the governorship in 2002. And he did govern that way to a great degree. Yeah, he worked with a very heavily Democratic legislature of sorts, of course. So these are the way he described it. He boasted about being independent. He boasted about voting in 1992 in the Democratic primary for former Senator Paul Zongas. So this is the way he promoted himself in running for office in Massachusetts. So then if you talk to people, as you know very well, in Massachusetts, that's the way they know him. When he was in the middle of his governorship, he was talking with his aides about running for president. And one of them I quoted in the story on Sunday, who was in some of these meetings, and they talked about how do we run for the Republican nomination given the way we're governing now. And they knew there had to be some changes. I'm not saying there weren't heartfelt shifts, because that's the way Romney would certainly describe them. Other people say, look, he's a business person, and it's sort of like looking at your market. The market in the Republican Party obviously is conservative. To win that nomination, he is running more conservative, and I don't know exactly what's in his heart, but obviously you can see he's drawn from different ideological places over his career, and some of it might depend on the makeup of Congress. So if Congress is heavily Republican, you would certainly think that he would govern as he's campaigned. If it's Democratic, to be pragmatic, maybe he would be more compromising with them. So it might depend on that.
Well, but he is selling himself as a Mr. Fix-It, and you detail exhaustively the workings of Bain Capital. You land on the analysis most people have. His concern had to be not creating jobs, but creating wealth for his investors. That was his job. We'll link listeners to our conversation about that, Scott Hellman, a while back. But what skills do you think he brings potentially to a White House?
Well, I think he's certainly proven to be a very competent manager, in business and at the Olympics and so forth. Whatever you think of necessarily, you know, the meat of those experiences or his political views, I mean, he is somebody who has a very sharp analytical mind and a capacity to lead big, complicated things, entities, solve hard problems. So, you know, and that's really his pitch. I mean, we talk a lot about this at this convention, even about how nobody knows him and he's cold and he's not a great campaigner and can they humanize him. But ultimately, that's not his pitch. His pitch is, I'm Mr. Fix-It. I can run big things. I can solve hard problems.
Yeah, the theme seems to be, you may not love him, but you will respect him. That's what we've been hearing. Just briefly, the book, by the way, has such powerful stories about the time Mitt Romney was driving leaders of the church in France. Terrible car accident, not his fault. The woman sitting next to him, the wife of the leader of the church, killed. Just awful. How when he was at Stanford, he would drive home to see his love, Anne, who was still in high school, and his father cut him off because he didn't want him to do that. So Mitt Romney sold his clothing so he could make those trips. Terrific stories. Very briefly, got about a minute left. Michael Cranish, how do you think he's going to do tonight?
Well, this really is the speech of his life. You know, probably the best speech or reviewed speech he's given previous to this is the 2007 speech on religion, where he tried to put aside questions about his Mormon faith and make people understand that he was not going to be controlled by the church and he would not try to control them, that he was a Mormon running for president, didn't want to be a Mormon president. So tonight, again, is a chance to go to an area that he's not terribly felt comfortable about, talking a lot about himself, more about himself as a church leader and what he's done to help people in that regard, and also presenting himself as someone who can connect to average people, although he's a very wealthy person. So we'll really try to cross those divides
tonight. That's a lot.
Tonight.
Yeah,
yes,
that's a lot. Boston Globe reporter Michael Cranish, along with Scott Hellman, they wrote the book The Real Romney, which was the backbone of that CNN documentary, and it is now out in paperback with a new forward. It's quite a compelling read. I want to thank you both for coming by.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay. Thanks for having us.
And take a quick break. We have the latest news next, but weigh in on anything. Go to hearandnow.org. We have pictures from here at the Tampa convention. Later today, an incredible story of how a monkey on the loose here in Tampa has something to do with this. You'll hear Here and Now.